The lovely strains of the Ted Heath Orchestra here on the round table. 9:13 on a Thursday morning. You remember Ted Heath?
Well, I remember him from his bar.
He had a bar?
Heath Bar.
All right, let's start again. I tell you what, let's get a microphone for Ira, and I'll do the usual introduction. Welcome back to the Roundtable, everyone. In this hour, we start off with an open, often contentious, occasionally interesting, once in a while nauseating discussion of issues in the news and beyond. It's our Roundtable panel, and joining us, our own bon vivant, Alan Shartok, University at Albany journalism professor and investigative reporter Rosemary Armeo, and we're joining with our old buddy, Daily Freeman, publisher emeritus, Ira Fussfeld, who's here once
Good
in a while.
Good morning.
Nice to have you here.
You look bright. You how many days did it take you to get over the Mets?
You know, I was the over-under was 12 seconds before you brought that up, Ira, and glad I took the under. It's only a game, Ira.
It's only a game.
You know, I think sports in this society take on much too much importance.
I happen to agree with you, but I don't think you thought that way last week.
No, I haven't slept in 5 days, but still. But again, thanks for bringing that up.
Sure, best team won.
We'll be discussing this today with some sports reporters on Vox Pop, and it'll be kind of a group counseling session. So anyway, folks, if you're ready to begin, I'll tell the folks at home the email address here is roundtable@wamc.org. Alan, what are you doing? Alan is standing up, gesturing through a window. What are you doing?
Well, let me put it this way. We just came in from doing the media project.
Right.
Right?
How'd that go?
Rex and David are still in there talking about different things.
Right.
Okay. I noticed that I couldn't read the stuff on my device because my glasses were missing.
You should have a monocle like Colonel Clink, you know?
Yeah. So I reached into... I went up to the window and signaled to these guys to bring my glasses in, which David Gastina kindly has just
you
done.
You know what?
I can see again. I can see
All
again.
All right, so you can see. Now, can you read? I mean, that's
no,
we'll
I've
find
never
out.
Been able to do that well.
We're going to find out. We'll get the font a little larger. Email address is roundtable@wamc.org if you want to check Alan's visual acuity. All right, we'll start out here. Well, they're at 10 Downing Street, I guess soon, if not right now, there is a meeting going on between David Cameron and the president of Egypt. Russia's top aviation official says investigators examining potential causes of the plane crash over Egypt will look for traces of explosives in the wreckage. Both Russia and Egypt have dismissed suggestions by Britain and the U.S. that a bomb was likely to have brought down the plane, killing all 224 people on board. British Prime Minister David Cameron says that the British don't know for certain that it was a terrorist bomb, but all indications are that it could be.
Our experts, I think, Ray, think that it was.
What about you? Well, I'll get to you in a minute.
Oh, me? I don't have a horse in the race.
Cameron now tempering this a bit, I guess, in preparation for the meeting with President Abdel Fattah el-Sisi in London coming up today. He says, we'll need to see the results of the investigation. But the British decision to suspend flights was based on all that intelligence and info that it's more likely than not a terrorist bomb. And the UK grounded all flights to and from Egypt's Sinai Peninsula on Wednesday. They're saying it's an overreaction. So what's up?
Well, to me, the most interesting part of the story is that the same thing could happen in an American airport. All the experts who were on TV last night talking about this say TSA will not protect you from this sort of thing. We do not screen stuff coming into cargo. And so it's possible that this happened. Was it a bomb? You're right. We won't know until the investigation is done. But our intelligence and the UK intelligence says, yes, it is. Of course, I do know these are the same guys who brought us weapons of mass destruction in Afghanistan. So they're not without problems, but it is a high possibility and it could happen here. I think the Brits are right to suspend flights over there. I hope United Airlines, which is still flying in the area or was, has changed their mind about it. Big danger.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to find anything profound to say about this. I agree entirely with Rosemary. I was going to suggest that it's possible that the security in Egypt where this plane began is less stringent than it is here. I don't really know.
That was an argument made, and the U.S. experts, aviation experts who were on all the channels last night were saying, we really shouldn't be throwing any stones. It's about what we have.
Yeah, I mean, the one suggestion I had heard was not just the possibility of a bomb that might have been put aboard cargo or in a suitcase, but it might have been by a handler on the tarmac.
Right.
and that also would suggest security breaches. I just find this is the most serious, clearly, problem with aviation today. But you get on a you from the moment you leave your house to get on down to the airport until you get to your destination, when it's me, I'm holding my breath the entire time. The entire experience of flying has become such both a nuisance and an annoyance and a fear. Fretful experience, and it's the sort of thing. Well, I'm not going to stop flying, so
and you have to pay a lot for
and
it
you have
too.
To, so I just I'm going on a plane in a couple of weeks, and I just hope that my time's not up. And what else can you do?
I'm headed towards Russia, so I know that feeling. There are obvious laps in our security, and they've been there for a long time. One is cargo, the other is how we treat the security of airport workers, handlers, as you put it on the
well. The implication here is that the security at that particular airport not as stringent as that here in the U.S. Now, ISIS, for whatever it's worth, has been more or less claiming credit for this since the weekend.
The problem is twice or three times now they've said yes, or a group associated with ISIS has said we did it. But they've not offered any kind of proof, like we can show you we did it.
They said they will in the course of time.
Except they haven't yet. Yeah.
Could anyone doubt the possibility of something like this happening in our country, even with the best security regarding baggage, that if there was somebody who wanted to turn and who had the ability to get near an aircraft on the tarmac and was paid well enough or had believed enough in the cause, that they could, in fact, plant something on an airplane before it leaves and it would blow up?
Well, you know, almost every almost every journalist who wants to win an award, or many have proven that. You know, they get into through security all the time. And there was just an audit, as a matter of fact, a government audit that found that the TSA stuff was disgraceful in terms of protecting people.
Well, I'm no friend of TSA, as you know, but while they're concentrating on our socks and my mother's crochet needles, there's these big lapses at the airport. Like, how do we make sure that people who work at airports and around planes have security clearance? And so, Ray, is it worse at the airport in Egypt? It might have been. It was kind of a resort city. It's not like Cairo. It's not a big major city. But I just have seen no conclusive proof that it was safer there. And as for ISIS, there's a big propaganda value, and they're getting out to the world that, hey, we have the ability to blow up a plane full of Russian babies. That makes them terrorists. So that's why we shouldn't believe it, not on the face of it.
It's tough to believe anything. And I have difficulty believing we'll have a transparent investigation here. This is a huge economic engine for Egypt, this particular area. England, UK, the number one tourist. I think there's 20,000 people there now. Russia is second in the number of tourists in this area. It's certainly, I'm sure the Russians, if they have a chance to whitewash the investigation, will say, well, this was not terrorism at all. This was a technical malfunction.
They might say that, but in a perverse sort of way, this could be a very positive step in the fight against ISIS, because if Russia at this point believes that ISIS blew up one of its planes, instead of going after the Assad opposition in Syria, rather than go against ISIS, which was supposedly the original plan, they may now turn their attention to ISIS.
Yeah, you'll remember the Russians' immediate response was no, it had nothing to do with the pilot. That plane was fine. That was their first response. So I don't see that as logical. I think this is ISIS picking a fight with Russia is like ISIS picking a fight with the U.S. by beheading people. They want to get it. They want to mix it up with the superpowers. That's what they think their mission
is. Well, they also believe that if they would love to have a fight with us, and if we went after them directly, they believe that would be good propaganda for them in the Islamic world.
Yes, sir.
The email address here is roundtable@wamc.org, roundtable@wamc.org. Ira Fussfeld, Rosemary Armeo, Alan Shartok on the panel, Ray Graff here in for Joe. We'll take a break. We'll be back.
Support comes from Atelier Rene Fine Framing Red Hook, a resource for custom-framed gifts for the holidays, photos, art, needlework, diplomas, mirrors, gift cards, and more. AtelierReneFineFraming.com. Union College Concert Series, presenting pianist Yefim Bronfman performing works of Prokofiev and Schumann en route to his recital at Carnegie Hall, Wednesday, November 11th, 7:30 p.m., unioncollegeconcerts.org. And the Carey Institute for Global Good, hosting meetings and business retreats on a historic 100-acre campus in the Helderberg Hills, careyinstitute.org.
back to the round table. Hi, everybody. We're back on. The light's on. It's the round table panel. It's very informal.
What does that mean when the light goes on?
That means we're on the air. It's an informal discussion that continues during
way
the breaks.
Way informal now.
Very nice. 23 minutes after 9 o'clock, Thursday morning, Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue. The panel, already deeply engaged in discussion, Ira Fussfeld, Rosemary Armeo, Alan Shartok. You want to join the conversation? We'd love to hear from you at times. Roundtable at WAMC.org is the email address.
Do you
address.
Agree with us?
Roundtable at WAMC.org.
That's right.
And
that's
what
right.
do we have there,
the first
Alan?
Letter today can't say Alan was right because you've been relatively quiet these first
Well,
few
I've
minutes.
Been trying to give you guys the credit you deserve and giving you the
He was very
space.
Quiet,
yeah.
wasn't he?
Was.
I knew something was missing.
We'll have to check the phase of the moon or play the lottery.
Okay, George says yes to Ray. Sports is given far too much importance and significance in this country and the world, too, for that matter. And that's from George.
All right, George, tune in at 2 for Vox Pop when we have some sports editors on and we'll talk about sports.
Oh, cool. Good morning, panels. Who's seated to the left of Rosemary?
It's Alan.
He looks
the left on the screen. Let me. Am I out of the frame?
All right, is this our usual TV director?
Yes. I don't know. No, it's not. This is from Cody. He looks mildly more dapper than the fellow usually there.
Ah.
Perhaps Paul Simon's doppelganger. Now it
You're
could
Paul
be,
Simon's doppelganger. Ira Fussfeld is Paul Simon. You are. I think
no,
it's
I
you.
Think, I think it's me because I'm wearing a tie-less, grandpa shirt. Neighbor,
and you look like Paul Simon.
And
you
is Garfunkel so? On the program today?
You think so?
As a matter of fact.
So there you have it.
Yeah.
Funny how
it's a reunion. It's amazing.
Yeah.
That makes us Peter, Paul, and Mary on the side of the table.
I've been listening to them on the Great Bike this morning.
They're great.
There's nothing better.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Best concerts I ever
went to. Interesting.
I was talking to
We're
somebody.
Far afield.
I was talking to somebody yesterday who was telling me, I think it was, who was it? It was a teacher. And they were saying, I had told them a story about how I had gone to one of David Gastina's classes and nobody knew who Pete Seeger was when I talked about interviewing him. And then somebody else telling me the story about I can top that. They went in and they said, it was Joe Donahue, and saying, in my class, I mentioned Bob Zimmerman, and nobody knew who he was. And I said, okay, that was unfair.
Yeah.
That was unfair. It's Dylan. And they still didn't know.
Oh.
Yes.
Still didn't know who it was.
Yeah. Well, I mean, those times are, it was a long time ago, right?
Okay, Daniel says, I don't know who what was funnier, Alan's terrible joke or Rosemary's audible groan in response.
Do we remember? A lot of Alan.
Yeah.
Do we remember what the joke was?
No, I don't.
There was no joke. That's the point.
Well, you know who else said that?
Oh, no.
Who?
Freud.
Freud said, oh, there is
the
no joke.
Very famous quote, there is no joke because everything has meaning. Get it?
Whatevs.
Got it.
There is no joke.
Email is roundtable at WAMC.org. Any more interesting?
No, it doesn't look good. Oh, yeah, wait a second. Robert says, hi, panel. The focus today is on safety in airline travel, but we are potentially subjected to terrorism in our daily lives hundreds of ways. Do we want to have a police state in order to feel safe? And that's from Robert.
All right, well, we do not.
Okay, Rosemary, so you're the one who flies the most and probably Ira second most. What do you do? Where's that line? You want to be safe, right?
I put it out of my head. I just go.
That's how we get fascism. Inevitably, people really care about their personal safety.
I know. I try to fight that.
And when somebody promises you personal safety, there are a lot of people, maybe not this panel, but I confess I am in favor of personal safety. There are a lot of people who
Libby, too. Both of you argue for that all the time. But they can't.
Right.
No one can give you personal safety. All the guarantees are bogus.
I don't know. But
with TSA.
But as the old saying goes, we haven't seen anything on El Al, and they really know what they're doing.
El Al does a lot of things that we could be doing. And
such as profiling.
Profiling, cargo inspections, a program for people who work in airports. These are things we've all rejected. I don't know why. Not rejected. We haven't implemented them.
Well,
part of it is the concern that one would have about civil liberties. Part of it is economic. They want it's bad enough that you might have to wait a half hour on a TSA line. It could easily become an hour or an hour and a half. What do they say if you're flying? I've never flown to Israel.
I haven't. You don't wait at all.
They say you have to wait a couple of hours. Plan on a couple of hours to be going through
security. They say that here, too. You plan on 3 hours.
So, one of the great inventions, if you're not as concerned about danger and more about speed is you become part of this TSA PreCheck program, which I am. You cost you $85, I think. It covers you for 3 years. You're fingerprinted. They supposedly do a background check on you. And once you get that, there's a separate line for you at the airport. Well, and you don't have to take off your shoes. And it's not quite as stringent.
Mm. Well, I didn't do it because they make it very difficult to get that. You have to go have an interview at Kennedy Airport.
No. You can. I filled out the application online, and I had my fingerprints up here in Albany.
Oh, boy.
And then the other thing, they still wanted an interview when I tried it.
Well,
the other thing is that whenever, maybe, you fly to weird places.
Wait a minute. Hold.
Wherever there's a place like in Newark or Albany where a TSA is like shorthanded, which happens all the time, or there's some threat that they don't tell you about, they'll suspend all the TSA pre-checks. So I didn't think it was worth it.
You have to give your fingerprints to get this pre-check. When you go, do they scan your fingerprints?
No.
What's the point?
Anyone can have a false credential. Your passport is
it's connected to your passport.
Your name is sort of pre-cleared. But don't you see the thing that I really am ticked off about?
Oh, boy. We're almost out of time for this half hour.
Okay, I'll be very quickly about this, is paying for my luggage. Now, I happen to have not a great back. And, you know, I can't carry stuff.
Yeah.
And so they want a lot of money.
Well, that's another thing that has made flying distasteful because you want to bring on a carry-on bag and you have to be concerned that you're going to have room in the overhead for the carry-on bag.
Right, because everyone's bringing on carry-ons because they don't want to pay.
All right, the email address here is roundtable@wamc.org. Alan is here. Ira is here. Rosemary is here. Ray here in for Joe. And once again, you can email us, roundtable@wamc.org. A brief break for news from the Brits, don't you know? We'll be back.
Don't you know?
Welcome back to the Roundtable on WAMC. 9:33 on a Thursday morning. Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue, joined today by the big star, Rosemary Armeo, is here gearing up for her live performance next Friday at the Linda.
I'm going to wear red for the lady who promised to throw tomatoes at me for how badly I treat
Alan. Why don't you wear just a rain slicker, you know?
Oh, that'd be good. Yeah.
You know?
Oh, are you having a live version of this panel?
On a week from Friday, the 13th of
Friday,
November.
Friday the 13th. Yeah. I don't know who
was
responsible.
The only reason you couldn't be on it, Iris, is you're going to be away.
No, because it's a Friday.
Oh, hey, listen, man, you can take my spot if you want, Ira Fussfeld. Sure. Alan Shartok will be there.
I asked about that, yeah.
As well, and nice to have you here, Alan, as always.
Well, thank you for that, Raymond. It's always nice to, you know, every morning I come in, I read my papers, I bring them over, we share around here, and I put them on Raymond's desk.
Sure.
Yeah.
And you're speaking about Rosemary being a star. You know, when we leave the studio after the program, there's always a handful of people outside, like at the stage door.
Absolutely.
Waiting to see Rosemary.
Absolutely. And a lot of people write nice, kind things about her. Right. We get email at roundtable@wamc.org.
We do.
And sometimes people who don't, not happy with you.
No, it's absolutely true.
What do we have? Anything in the mailbag?
Okay, in the mailbag from Tony. I travel internationally a lot, and I am grateful for Global Entry, which also allows me the TSA pre-line when departing. They know all about us anyway, so I may as well take advantage of the government scrutiny of my life. Ironically, I can get into the UK faster than the US, even though I'm a US citizen. And like that.
Okay.
And then from Hey Panel.
Hi.
How about a discussion concerning the shocking discovery that police officer Joseph Glunowitz was found to have embezzled money from the youth group he was working with and killed himself because he was going to be exposed? This lionized officer cost the town $250,000 for the manhunt for supposed killers in addition to the monies he stole. We're going to get to that, but it's not the first time something like that has happened.
Really?
Well, you'll remember, not only by a police officer, but by other people who may accuse, two people who were black robbed me. Remember that whole thing years ago and that kind of thing?
Yeah, place the crimes.
And then Susan says, I choose to take my chances because about 75% of the time I have had a TSA recheck print out on my boarding pass. Observation. Since summer it's more like 25% of the time I get a signed random TSA recheck, and I've heard this from other passengers griping in the security ones with me. Also notice that Albany, O'Hare, and Philly, the screening seems to have picked up a notch.
Yeah, whenever they're really backed up and crowded in TSA lines, they start handing out pre-checks to get people out of the way. Real safe.
Yeah. Well, they always do that thing where they touch me all over my body.
You like always. That.
That's why you fly a lot. Oh, yeah. You like that.
No, whenever I do that, they, you know, I think they see me. And they
you know, look, to go back to the point that we almost made, I think that it's fine to want to substitute your civil rights for personal safety. My objection is that we're substituting our civil rights for TSA, which does not ensure personal security. If you want to do that, then let them profile.
Okay, so
and then you're really safe.
Okay, you said the magic word. First of all, first question, do you think there is not profiling going on in some basic level already?
Yep.
Which
of course
why they
is.
Do that to me every time because right. I fit their profile.
They say, right. You know, be on the lookout for a Paul Simon lookalike.
Yeah. Dark hair, we'll get it.
Okay, so
traveling alone will do it. Having a one-way ticket will do it. Yeah, lots of things.
You can call him Alan.
So you can call him Alan. So you mentioned Israel earlier and their airlines very – up till now, very, very, very safe.
100%.
Okay. Profiling going on.
Absolutely.
And as you, I think, mentioned during the break, it was very quick. You get in and out very quickly.
Except for the people who are profiled. I went through it one time with a stamp from Algeria, an Arab country, and my passport. I spent 2 hours and missed my connecting, you know, bus mm-hmm. ride that had mm. to go out. But you understood why from the very beginning.
Yeah.
Okay. I think it's sort of – it's evolving like drug testing. You'll hear people say – I don't do drugs, or I don't mind being profiled because I've got nothing to hide. I'm
right.
safe. I have no weapons. I don't
right.
have any plans. And I think more and more people are coming around to that.
Well, it's a different mindset. I look at it like sobriety checkpoints. 30, 35 years ago, you say, checkpoints? When you're presumed innocent? This is not a fascist country. Now, almost everybody says, oh, it's a sobriety checkpoint, just keeping us safe. Mm-hmm. It's a different mm-hmm. – the world mentality – is it changing?
The well, difference is whether that you really do have some measure of increased security. And I really do not. I think TSA is a Band-Aid. It makes us feel better when there's nothing there to indicate we should be feeling safer.
Yeah. Well,
one's flown a plane into a building, obviously, lately, right?
Well, it only happened one time even before that with no security at all, Ray. Come
incorrect.
On.
Incorrect. Because the last time I flew was May of 2001, prior to the buildings coming down. Here's Ray on his honeymoon having to take his belt and shoes off on his way, I think it was out of Reagan Airport. Because I fit the profile, obviously, in my short-sleeve shirt
you
on
do?
The way to Palm Beach. No, I didn't. And the point is, this was 4 months, 5 months before the towers came down. So, they were obviously looking for something.
Mm-hmm.
What's up with that?
Well, am I wrong in saying that the initial security, not nearly as significant as it is now, the initial security started going up after a wave of hijackers. Not hijackers who wanted to blow up planes,
yeah.
but hijackers who said, take me to Cuba. Those kinds of events.
Yeah,
well, also because there comes that point when, you know, we have these checks on the checkers. And it turns out that they're not doing too good,
yeah.
as we say.
On the TSA agents.
Yeah, the
yeah
TSA.
Well, I don't know how much they pay these people. I don't
not
know
much.
Whether if they're any more skilled at doing what they're
well,
doing.
Well, they're very skilled. I watched one day I was at the airport. Remember Mason and Sheehan used to be the morning shock talks?
Ah, yes, the golden age of radio.
Remember that?
Yeah.
And there was Sheehan. He was a TSA guy from radio to checking your
it's a step up, right, if you get tired, really tired of this.
The radio doesn't pay very much historically. Was he in this market?
Yeah,
the,
yeah, right over the airport.
Market.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
He probably wasn't making a lot of money.
Memories. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org is the email address. A doctor testifying in the corruption case against former New York Assembly Speaker Sheldon Silver says he referred cases to Silver's law firm in order to get research funding. Dr. Robert Taub told a Manhattan federal jury yesterday that he initially lied when investigators asked if he had referred asbestos victims to Silver for legal representation because he was terrified. Taub said he later admitted referring more than 25 clients to Silver in the hopes that the powerful Democrat would help his research center. Taub is testifying under a non-prosecution agreement. He said the assemblyman began arranging $500,000 in state aid to his center months after we referred patients. The doctor said Silver also helped his children get jobs. Silver is charged with earning $5 million illegally through bribes and kickbacks. He has pleaded not guilty. Alan.
Well, first of all, I just want to do the, as they say, the bracha before the meal. I want to say how much.
What does that mean?
It's the prayer before the meal.
Okay, all right.
I want to say how much I admire Preparara, because he has pushed the line here. Now, let me ask everybody to put themselves on the jury. You're on the jury, and you are asked this question. When does something, an arrangement, become a bribe, right? is a bribe when somebody before a microphone like the ones we're speaking into, not knowing it, says, if you do this for me, then I'll do that for you. Yes, that's a bribe. Okay. But is it a bribe when somebody says to you, I would appreciate it if you would send me all of your mesothelioma patients who need legal representation to my firm, but there is no specific immediate response. Do you understand?
Yes.
In other words, there's no confirmation of that. That's what somebody on the jury is going to be looking at.
Isn't that right what here. They should be looking at?
What do you mean?
A specific quid pro quo.
You know, that's why you get very few people being stupid enough to, to get convicted on bribes. We see it. We saw one guy in the assembly a couple of years ago who was talking to an FBI agent, bragging all over the place on their way into the assembly about how he could do all of this. But in fact, if Silver gets off, it's going to be because somebody on that jury either hangs the jury or convinces the jury that there wasn't a specific quid pro quo. The Bharara approach, which I appreciate, is that one and one makes two. If, in fact, all of this stuff, please send me the stuff. And then somewhere along the line, you get these grants, these government grants for a wonderful thing like a mesothelioma clinic. That is not basically a bribe.
Here's what concerns me. If Silver is acquitted of these charges, not because the jury becomes convinced that what he may have done, which what we may describe as a bribe, turns out to be not technically a bribe under the rules of Albany.
Exactly.
And that the Albany culture is such that what Silver may have done, that what smells like, it sounds like a duck, and et cetera,
quacks like a duck.
Looks like is legally okay in Albany. And if that happens, can you imagine the doors being thrown wide open in this already problematic Albany ethical situation? I mean, I hope I don't want Silver to be found guilty if he is not guilty. But boy, I hope that this doesn't somehow give free rein to further ethical problems because he's somehow gotten
further ethical problems. There are plenty of ethical problems already.
Exactly.
How can it get much further?
But I think what Ira is saying makes a certain amount of sense.
The culture of Albany.
If he gets away, Joe Bruno eventually got found
not
innocent because we're going to have another whole thing about that, but got found not guilty. And then if this happens here, it, as Ira says, it just says the green light to go ahead.
I think that this doctor was an amazingly effective prosecution witness, far more than in the prosecution in Joe Bruno's trial, who all liked him and were there under protest. This guy said he knew from the beginning that it was a deal that would benefit the Speaker of the House. And
but how do you prove that?
Well,
in other words,
I
have a gut that Alan has a deal with me that if I do something, X will happen, that'll be good for me. If he doesn't say it, how can you prove it?
What he described on the stand was an amazingly straightforward deal. Arrangement is a nice name for a deal.
No, but deal,
you send
it.
Me people.
Yeah, right.
You send me people and then apply for a grant. He even had a friend of Sheldon Silver who was helping him out writing the letter for the grant. And poof, suddenly there's $500,000 going to a center. The real shame here is that center probably should have gotten state money anyway. Why did he have to play anything at all with it? Why did he have to make any kind of arrangement with the speaker?
Okay.
And the other thing is his patients probably benefited by going to Silver's law firm. They ended up with all kinds of settlements from the asbestos companies that they were suing.
Okay, but
so everybody really benefited in this deal.
That's
except
true, but Rosemary, isn't that legal? You see, that's the problem.
I don't think
here.
It's legal. Why did the speaker say to the doctor, "Look, let this be our little secret. Don't tell
did
anybody."
Did he say that?
Yes,
yeah.
he did.
He testified about it. Why did he say it then?
That's right. Well, that's a very important point.
That's a smoking gun.
Well, it is a smoking gun. But again, we come down to this business of, how are you going to prove there was a specific agreement or deal?
Well, the worst that can happen, and Silver's lawyer, the first question he asked was there an explicit grant for patient referral deal? And he said, no, there was not. So if our law requires such a deal, then that will be exposed by this trial, and maybe there should be public pressure to change the damn law.
Yeah, except that the problem is on the state level, the guys who are doing the babysitting, in other words, the guys who are supposed to be doing it, are passing the laws, and they're passing them in their own favor.
And we vote for those guys.
And that's why we need a federal prosecutor like Preet Bharara. At least he's trying.
I don't think I have to sing his praises. You do that a lot.
I do, because I am so impressed with what he's done.
Well, let's let him get a
conviction
first.
Well, isn't he just the latest in a long line of federal prosecutors who have come through New York? I mean, Giuliani was heralded in those days. Does it go back to Tom Dewey?
And, yeah, he's running for office himself, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, that's right. That's been considered. But I just, you know, to the point I made, and Alan, I think, agrees with me, if Silver is acquitted, less so because of what he may have done and more so because it's okay in this Albany, the rules allow it in Albany, then we've got big problems, even bigger problems in Albany. I mean, we've already seen Bruno get off. We may see Silver.
He paid a
get
terrible
off.
Price, by the way.
I want to see Silver on the stand talking about what a great humanitarian he is and what a wonderful arrangement this was. I really want to hear
that. And by the
way,
doesn't Skelos have a bigger problem?
He does. Yes. Yeah. Skelos has a bigger problem because I think they have better tape recordings.
Yeah. He's, for the uninitiated, the Republican Senate leader for some years.
Who is being prosecuted in just a few days, actually, for having tried to get his son a job.
So if he and Silver are acquitted, where does that leave Bharara?
Well, that's a great question. On the one hand, there's the Bharara defense, which is, I tried. Yeah. You know, I tried. Give me credit for trying.
We'll give him credit, but he'll deflate like a Macy's Day balloon if he does not win these cases. He's got his career on the line here.
The email address here is roundtable@wamc.org, roundtable@wamc.org. Ira Fussfeld, Rosemary Armeo, Alan Chartok, Ray Graff here in for Joe Donahue. We'll take a break and we'll be back.
Support comes from the Preservation League of New York State, Albany, New York, announcing their updated website with more information about membership, grants, and loans, so our past has a future. PreserveNYS.org. Mark Lawson Antiques, Saratoga Springs and Colony, New York, purchasing jewelry and diamonds, coin collections, silver, antiques, fine art, and estates. MarkLawson.com. And Bard College Master of Arts and Teaching Program, offering 1-year full-time and 2-year part-time master's degrees and teacher certification. Meet them at Info Session Thursday, December 3rd at 6 p.m. MAT@bard.edu to RSVP.
Welcome back to the Roundtable on WAMC, 949 Thursday morning. Ray Graff in for Joe. Alan's here. Rosemary's here. Ira Fussfeld is here. A close-knit Illinois community is struggling to make sense of authorities' announcement that a popular police officer staged his suicide to make it look like he died in the line of duty. Signs hung in honor of Lieutenant Charles Joseph Glenowitz after his death were taken down Wednesday around the village of Fox Lake. He'd worked there for years and had been known to many as G.I. Joe. On Wednesday, one sign was altered to label him instead G.I. Joke. Investigators said yesterday morning that Glenowitz killed himself, saying his theft of thousands of dollars from a police program for youth was about to be exposed. The Washington, D.C.-based Law Enforcement Officers Memorial Fund said Glenowitz's name would no longer be etched onto a marble monument dedicated to fallen officers. Who goes first?
Well, let me just start by saying, you know, I'm a great believer that there are a lot of very good policemen in this world. But also, politics is the authoritative allocation of scarce resources, and if anybody can move things around, it's a cop. Policemen have the ability to really either push people around or to get involved in something like this. I've been talking for a couple of days now about, and it does not reflect on my hometown police department, really, but the fact that I brought my OxyContin that I got from my back into the police station and asked for a receipt. Doesn't seem outrageous to ask
no,
for a
doesn't.
Receipt. They said, we don't give receipts. This, of course, look, if you went through the 1960s and 70s and you saw Serpico and you saw all of the things that David Dirk and all the things that happened back there, we have to keep our eyes open about police and the kinds of power that they have.
That's all those good police that you talk about, Alan, need to step up right now. Police are in terrible PR right now for horrible things they've done. So all the good cops who don't like this happening, why aren't they protesting? Why aren't they pointing the finger at the bad crop among them?
Sure.
Journalists do this. You know, you plagiarize or lie, and your fellow journalists are going to scream you out and reveal what you've done. I'm not seeing that with cops. Instead, it's a circling of the wagons. It's like, oh, the good cops are here. We have the DEA and the FBI officials are now saying, you made such a fuss in Ferguson when we killed one little white kid, black kid, that now cops aren't stopping to do their job. Really? We have to allow them to do things like what happened in Ferguson in order to get good policing out of them?
Do you think you are sort of overstating what the FBI chief said?
He said there was
one little black kid. He didn't say anything like that.
He said the Ferguson effect is serious, that we are seeing a rise in crime because cops are afraid to do their job because they might be filmed.
Yes,
and then
that's different.
And then he got screamed at, the FBI, the White House and everything, said that's crazy. Cops are not doing their job out of that kind of fear. And then the DEA chief said, you know, the guy in the FBI is right. That's circling the wagon, saying we really are heroes. There's a few bad ones. I accept that. But the heroes, the real good cops, need to start doing a better job policing themselves. I also feel sorry for this bad cop's wife,
yeah,
who's now being asked to pay back $15,000 that she was given by a group that supports, you know, survivors when a first responder is killed.
Ultimately,
that's
a
bad
crime and a tragedy.
Yeah.
I don't know how much more you can say about it. It is one case.
Yeah.
Ira, you want to
weigh in? Well, it's one case, but Rosemary made the point I was going to make. There are other businesses, industries, professions that do a much better job of owning up to the mistakes of the few transgressors and point fingers at them and say, we can't stand for this. I just look at it. We're talking about the TSA and are they lax? And you look at police officers and there's a sort of a contract that all of us who are Americans make with the government. And that is, we are paying our taxes and you're going to provide a number of services for us, particularly in protective services. And we are presuming that you're going to be honest and you're going to do the right job. And when, even when it's only one, and there are one here and one there and one there, the entire fabric of society is impacted and the contract is broken. And it's very hard to put the contract back together like Humpty Dumpty.
Ooh, so, nicely put.
Okay. The email address here is roundtable@wamc.org. I wanted to get this story in.
Sure, please, sir.
Now, just a note for parents of small children, you may not want to listen to this segment if you haven't had the birds and the bees discussion. I'll give you a chance to turn the radio off.
One, two, three. Okay.
Now, there was a piece from CNBC. Here's the headline. Should you have sex with robots? Experts weigh in. It's a question that has sparked fierce debate among moralists and the robotics industry, and it turns out they're all split on the role that machines should play in future relationships. During a discussion at the Web Summit Technology Conference in Dublin on Wednesday, experts warned about the dangers of getting intimate with robots. One academic said, we're losing our sense of humanity. I throw it to the panel.
I don't see how you're going to stop it. In other words, I think it's going to happen. We already have blow-up plastic.
Vibrators are mechanical devices.
I don't see how it stops. I think it's fine for the academic experts to check in and say, you know, really, this is going to interfere with human relationships and that kind of thing. But why is somebody not allowed to do that?
Well, here's what they say. This is a quote from Kathleen Richardson, who's a senior research fellow in the ethics of robotics in the UK.
Yeah.
At De Montfort University. It's something we should be very concerned about, because if people feel they can have an intimate relationship with a machine, that is saying something serious about how we're experiencing empathy with each other.
Well, you can say that.
Looking back,
think of all the bad jokes that are going to come out of this.
Yeah, looking back at some relationships and a marriage I've had, I think robots might be a good alternative. I'd be willing to give it a try.
Oh, good Lord.
You know what Rodney Dangerfield said about sex? The first time he had sex, he was very nervous because he was by himself at the time. You've got robotic sex. There are people who have been married more than 40 or 50 years who may feel that that's what they're coming.
All right, Ira. I know you were planning that.
I knew somebody was going to do that.
Well done.
There may be another one. The other one was there's a Lorena Bobbitt joke in there. So make sure your robot is in good working condition.
Right.
You may lose a part.
You think about it. You won't have to take the robot out to dinner. A quart of oil and you're good.
Somebody's
right?
going to write to us and say this is a serious topic and light of it.
It is a serious topic.
Is it the New York Times?
No, CNBC. But I think it's a frightening topic down the road. Now, the flip side of this is some people who are proponents of this say, listen, there are people out there who are desperately lonely, who have trouble
sure.
with one-on-one relationships with anybody.
Sure.
And this, even if it's phony, is
well,
a step in the right
direction. That was the premise for at least two movies I can think of. What was it? Yeah. Lars and the Real Girl, where the guy had a doll, and the other one was Joaquin Phoenix.
And well, you heard from Ted. Yeah. Simply one word, an explanation point. Yes!
Yes, it's okay.
Well, you know, my ex-husband loved his car a whole lot more than he did me. That's sort of the same thing. I mean, we'll have stories about competing with robot
people
lovers.
Making love to their cars.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, presumably he wasn't... No, I can't.
What did you say?
No, don't. I have children.
It. Yeah, you know what? All right.
What did you say?
I'm making myself uncomfortable. So it's a new low on the round table. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Any
you got lots. Rick says, I plan to get the TSA pre-checked, by the way.
Okay,
that's
very
nice.
Highly recommended.
Robert says, Rosemary, there's no equivalency between journalist plagiarism and bad police shootings. The former is a planned action that takes place over time. The latter is often a split-second decision that turns out wrong. What cop isn't terrified by the possibility and therefore willing to give fellow officers the benefit of the doubt? So I don't
think you should be willing to give them the benefit of the doubt anymore.
By the way, I agree with you.
There are different fields, but no one in journalism who fabricates or makes up a story is killing someone. There's no life and death involved. So the measure is actually, the test is higher for cops than it is for us.
Gort wrote, Rosemary, can I take you out? Gort.
Gort. Gort the robot.
Are you a robot? Yeah. Yes.
Latu.
Okay,
very good,
we
very
did
good.
That one. And Pasetto says, we have one in Lee that will probably get off. There's a
robot?
No, it's a police.
I see.
Double entendre.
Yeah. An observation, says Paul. On the heels of what appeared to be another example of the murder of a police officer, there were many fingers pointed that the Black Lives Matter movement as promoting violence towards cops, a ludicrous concept if you know anything about the BLM, but it got a great deal of traction. Retraction from those quarters seems to be sparse so far, at least. And Travis says, laughing out loud, should we or should we not have sex with robots? Talk about a first world problem.
Yes.
Actually, you know, you wouldn't have to use birth control. It could be a solution to some third world problems, too, when you
another
think about
movie
it.
Of Woody Allen and Sleeper. That
well,
was
a lot of people
right.
are checking
That's
in on
right.
that.
Okay, well, unfortunately, we're out of time.
Yeah, about the names of the movies, the various movies, like
it was her. Not she. Yeah, that's yeah, right. Okay, right. I got my pronouns
her.
Mixed up.
Yeah. One more?
I think I just want to leave.
Oh.
No,
you
we're
feel
we're,
dirty?
We're, I feel dirty. I'm sorry I brought it up. All right, everybody, this was fun.
Wasn't it?
When will I be asked to come back?
Never. Ira no. Fussfeld is here, and that's
we
the last appearance. Rosemary Armeo, thanks, Rosemary. We'll see you again maybe tomorrow?
Yeah, I'll
okay.
be here tomorrow.
Alan?
I'm always here, right, like it or not.
All right, hour two on the way.